Welcome to the UltraDent Products Podcast. Today's guests are Neil Jessup from UltraDent's R&D department and Dr. Jeff Brucia. Dr. Brucia has been involved in adhesive research for many years and is a lecturing dentist practicing in San Francisco. They will be discussing the pros and cons of acetone and ethanol as solvents in bonding agents during part one of this episode.
Hi, this is Dr. Jeff Brucia. I'm a private practicing dentist in San Francisco, California.
And I'm Neil Jessup. I work with research and development here at UltraDent Products. And today we're going to talk with Dr. Brucia about ethanol versus acetone, and he's got a lot of insight due to this, or in this arena, and I think he'll be able to share with us what his thoughts are about ease of use and what makes a better bond. Dr. Brucia, do you want to tell us a little bit of what the thrust of your lecture is about?
Great, I'd love to, Neil. You know as well as I the frustration that's out there in adhesive dentistry and the constant changes in chemistry that we're seeing to try to help address some of the problems that doctors are having with technique sensitivity and basically post-operative sensitivity. And what I always look for is a material that's going to give us the largest window of opportunity, meaning allowing a doctor to make the most amount of clinical errors or, said better as a practicing dentist, allow for a moving, wet target and be able to provide the most reliable, predictable adhesive seal and bond over a period of time. I think that there are three different solvents right now in most of the chemistry out there in adhesive dentistry, ethanol being one of them, acetone being the second, and water being the third. Some of the systems are mixing these different components together also. When you are working with a patient, you want to use a more user-friendly material. Acetone-based products are found in many of the adhesives, and they're really designed to work in an ideal moisture environment, something that we would consider a blot dry environment, a slightly moist, slightly dry environment. And when you leave that very specific window, you're going to compromise the material significantly. I believe the biggest marketing thrust behind putting acetone in it is their rapid evaporation, meaning it's going to cut the time of evaporation down clinically. But then you have to be very, very good with your water control or moisture control in the area.
If you do go outside those bounds, what might you expect would be the outcome? Do you see a decrease in bond strength? Do you see an increase in sensitivity? What are the things that you would generally expect to see if you actually don't hit that window?
I like to believe that they're all related. I think as your bond strength goes down, your potential for lifting the composite off that horizontal floor increases, and there, that will lead to sensitivity. So, yes, if you do not hit that small window of perfection in surface preparation, you will lose bond strength. That's been proven on many, 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 many studies and tests. So, with that venture away from the perfect environment, your bond strength will go down. Sensitivity will go up, seal will decrease, and you're going to get very frustrated with postoperative sensitivity.
Is it a challenging thing to actually hit that window right of the perfect moisture content on that tooth surface?
I work in vitro studies on a lab bench where I have 100% control, and I know that I have to be extremely careful with my lab bench studies to create that ideal environment for testing acetone-based products. I don't think I could reproduce that perfect environment in the mouth that I'm able to create on a lab bench.
So it's pretty hit and miss for you is what you feel.
I do, yeah.
What's our next solvent that you want to talk about?
Well, the other two would be water and ethanol, and both being much, much more forgiving. I think they both will work well If the area is even slightly too moist or even slightly too dry, probably the biggest difference between the two is the time of evaporation. If you were to take a glass slide and including acetone in the discussion, place a drop of acetone, place a drop of alcohol or ethanol, place a drop of water, the acetone is going to evaporate the quickest but have the smallest window of opportunity. The ethanol will evaporate next and be very, very forgiving, and water will be the last to evaporate, also being very forgiving, but you absolutely have to eliminate that water, which means it's going to increase your visual recognition that the water is removed and also the time at which you need to introduce some type of an airflow to evaporate that solvent.
What happens when you don't remove the water? What's your negative outcome, or what is the outcome under that circumstance?
You're not going to get very good penetration of the primers, which is what you want, the actual bifunctional molecules, hydroxyethylmethacrylates or pentas that are out there. That won't saturate in to your demineralized layer, your leading edge of etch, that area of dentin that has been opened up to allow penetration of that primer. You'll get very superficial or not even any primer penetration, and you may get globules of material sitting on top of it.
That's interesting. Is there any scenario where the water inhibits polymerization or makes it so that these, as I understand it, the self-etch materials are the materials mostly containing water. Is there any scenario where it makes those products not polymerize properly and hydrolyze, or is there any danger of that with those water-containing ones? That's things I've heard. Is that true, or is there any basis to that?
Well, there's a couple of problems with the self-etching adhesive. The water trees that you're referring to, having that water in there and not properly evaporating it, as well as trying to combine too much chemistry to simplify the system, is going to negatively affect the adhesive bond. So I don't think water by itself can negatively affect the adhesive bond. Scotch Bond Multipurpose being an excellent example of a primarily water-based system where, if used properly, you can get to work very well. When you get into the newer systems that are predominantly water-based, and that's the self-etching systems, you've got a whole nother ball game in there. You've got complex chemistry, you've got lower pHs, you've got acid-base reactions, basically an incompatibility with certain techniques that we use in dentistry that, if doctors don't know that, they're going to end up with something that Franklin Tay and Pashley and David Pashley and others, including yourself, has shown to be incompatible with delayed cure, with self-cured, with dual-cured systems, that we are seeing the formation of water trees in our adhesive layer.
That's interesting. So you now have an option in front of you, and that is the ethanol that seems to be the most forgiving. Can you talk a little bit about why that's a superior system for you?
Well, ethanol, it's more than just ethanol. I think ethanol is a great start. It sits right in the middle of your window. It's going to work well in a slightly moist environment. It's going to work well in a slightly overdried environment. It's going to work ideal in a perfect environment. So I think alcohol or ethanol-based products are a great starting point. There's a second component that I'm a huge believer in, too, and that's placing fillers in adhesives. And you got to be careful when you actually look for fillers in adhesives. A lot of marketing is playing with the word filler, and they may be filling their adhesive 0.5%, 1%, 3%, 5%, 10%, 15%, while other adhesives are in the 40, 45, 48% filled adhesive range. And multiple tests have proved that just having a small amount of filler in it really doesn't change how that material works. As you get up into the 40, 45, 48% filler, now you're actually introducing an even more user-friendly component to your adhesive. You're introducing a stress breaker, a modulus of elasticity that's very forgiving to the high stress that we're introducing to our composite that we're placing right over it when it's like cured.
That's interesting. So at this point, if you don't have a filler, are you making it so you're not as likely to have success or have more sensitivity, or is the filler really to help allow this product to stay in place or thin better? What are your advantages clinically that you see with a filler?
Well, I'll answer it from a clinical point of view, but you being such a well-versed researcher, I'd like to also ask you what you're seeing in lab bench studies that you've conducted. From a clinical point of view, what a filler allows us to do is introduce a stress breaker. And dentists are very familiar with the stress breaking function. We use it in crowns, we use it in partials. Here we're using it in adhesive dentistry. I always compare creating a successful adhesive bond to a tug of war. On one side of that tug of war, you're going to have bond strength and that bond's ability to absorb stress. On the other side of that tug of war, you're going to have shrinkage stress, and that coming from curing that composite. You can increase or decrease that shrinkage stress based on the viscosity of your composite, based on the speed at which you cure, based on the amount of intensity of light that you introduce. So if you're not doing much on that side, you're hoping for the very strongest bond on the other side. And by introducing the stress breaker, it's going to actually help absorb some of the stress that doctors presently are introducing by using these packable composites, these high viscosity composites, these very rapid curing lights. So on a clinical side, that's what I'm seeing doctors confronted with, opportunities through marketing to introduce a tremendous amount of stress to that composite when we're curing it. By placing filler in there, it's going to help absorb some of that stress. Let me ask you, since I'm asking or answering all the questions, from a research point of view, you've done thousands and thousands of lab bench studies, and you, I would consider, an expert at a lab bench study. You could probably make any product work well, but I know you've had a number of other doctors out there conducting basically beginning-level studies. What have you seen? Alcohol versus acetone versus water, filled versus unfilled.
I'll move quickly through those. I think I'm in agreement with you. The acetone seems to be much more challenging to be able to get a forgiving surface on. You'd normally have to see a glistening wet surface for the acetone to work well. And the acetone has other huge negatives associated with it, and that is that usually our systems are being dispensed into mixing wells and things like this, and the acetone, it does so readily volatilize, as you've already said. If you place acetone and alcohol and water on a slide, you'll see that acetone disappear in seconds. And under that premise, if the acetone evaporates, your product, your adhesive sitting in that well is suddenly not going to work like it's supposed to. The acetone has the ability to solvate resins, or the adhesives that are sitting in there, to make them so they do flow into the tooth. But if that that acetone is gone, then suddenly those ratios that allow that viscosity, that correct viscosity product to flow into the tooth, it just suddenly won't flow anymore. It's too thick and it won't penetrate. So it has those kind of negatives going for it. As far as alcohol goes, I think it is the about the most forgiving product we can use as far as a solvent in an adhesive system. It seems to be a system that allows you to really run the tooth quite dry or run the tooth fairly wet and still get good success. In fact, as we often do the testing here and tell people to push it to either extreme, too wet or too dry, and see what happens, and they still have pretty good success using it, whereas with an acetone that wouldn't be the case. If they were to push too wet, they'd see some pretty substantial drops, and if they were to push too dry at all, that's really the side that gets dangerous with acetone systems, is those bond values decrease a lot there. And it's not that here and there a bond won't work really well, but generally speaking, the deviation in those bonding tests goes way up, and it's hit and miss for you, and you don't have any consistency with it. And I don't think any clinician wants to think, well, sometimes I got it right. They want to know all of the time they got it right and have given every benefit going for them that they can make this work right for them every time. So as far as fillers go now, playing into that, this also from a laboratory side, a bench testing side, we have always seen the products that have filler in them perform better. To relate that to a clinical side, I know is a little bit challenging, but we do know that if we can get consistency on the lab bench, it's more than likely going to translate into the clinical arena as well. It doesn't mean there's any way to specifically talk about bond strengths on the lab bench as correlating them to the mouth, but if we know that across the board, a brand new user or an old user, any type of person who comes to us, if they have more success with the filled products and ethanol-containing products, that we're going to more than likely see that translate back into an oral environment, into the clinical environment. So I've got a lot of faith in the alcohol systems and the filled systems. They have proven themselves time and again upon thousands of people testing it in our courses here that it does shine above and beyond the rest of the systems out there. And so it is important, I think, that we have these fillers from the stress breaking point of view that you've mentioned on into how the sheeting action works or the viscosity of the product is handled, and beyond that onto a micro level of structural integrity of the product. To have those glass particles in there does make the product stronger. We know that it does. It's kind of like taking cement. Until you have those filler particles in the cement, you just don't have strength. And we know that strength is enhanced and increased with filler particles. And as you've stated, it has to be a certain minimum level. It can't just be 1 or 2%. It needs to be something more substantial to actually get that interplay between the particles and the resin to function like it's supposed to. I'd like to hear a little bit about your thoughts on the water solvent systems and go a little further on that, if you could, for me.
Well, let me actually step back one part, because you had said something that I think is coming to a head right now as far as clinical performance. And in dentistry right now, we are very key on the term evidence-based dentistry. And the lowest tier of evidence-based dentistry is observation. And being a dentist that has used a filled adhesive for 12 years in my career and nothing other than a filled adhesive for 12 years, I see every day clinical observation of success that's got the potential to last much, much, much longer than 12 years. My clinical dentistry, rarely, if ever, has postoperative sensitivity. And at 12 years, the margins of the restorations are in alpha range. They look outstanding. Dr. Harold Hyman out at North Carolina is just submitting a 12-year in vivo follow-up study, one of the only ones I know of filled adhesive versus unfilled adhesive in Class 5 restorations. And the success rate is extremely high with the filled adhesives in a stressful environment such as a Class 5, much, much, much higher than any other adhesive. Al Bagrosian out at Northwestern is also submitting a 12-year in vivo follow-up of clinical cases done using filled versus unfilled adhesives on Class 5 restorations, and the filled adhesives through clinical evaluation are all nearly alpha, all perfect, whereas no other adhesive even comes close to that. So we do have a lot of significant evidence-based dentistry that supports everything you and I just said.
That's really honestly great to hear. In fact, as I want to push back onto that subject a little further even yet, we can get back to the water in a moment, but I hear so often people talk about, well, how long does a composite restoration last? And it's not uncommon that I hear people say, well, 3 to 5 years. And I really think that there has to be a strong push out there from guys like yourself and Dr. Fisher and as you talk about the studies that you've just mentioned, showing that there is longer-term success in this. I strongly believe that we have a population out there that still believes that adhesive bonding and composites are a little bit subpar, that they really aren't cutting it. But when I see quality looking restorations at 12 and 13 and 14 years out that still literally are holding up and holding that tooth together, whereas no other product could have done that in such a minimally invasive fashion, there's got to be a lot said for that. Our adhesives are better now by a long shot than they were 10 and 15 years ago. But even 10 years ago, we had some pretty darn good stuff that's showing us that your 12-year restorations are holding up. As it turns out now, our chemistries are more refined and we're only getting better. So we aren't going to see, at least under the current generations of adhesives, talking fourth and fifth generations, we aren't going to see these things failing in 4 or 5 years like a lot of the masses feel out there. This stuff is holding up, and holding up well in 10 to 15 years, and I think more. We've just got time to tell. But it's not a product that is subpar, or, well, let's just do it because maybe it's the right thing because it's on the front of the mouth. It's the right thing because it's anywhere in the mouth, and it's a good, strong solution for current needs of dentistry today.
Absolutely.
I feel like that's something that's slightly missed, is we have too many people not understanding and not believing in what today's adhesives and composites can do.
I don't think I could sleep well at night knowing that something I just did only has a chance of lasting 3 to 5 years.
Oh yeah, that would be the worst. That would really not be dentistry, and that wouldn't be worth practicing.
Right.
All right, Jeff, it's so good talking to you, and please give us a holler anytime you need to talk to us.
Great.
Thanks, we'll talk to you later.
You're welcome.
Okay, goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning into today's podcast. Tune in next week for remarks on water as a solvent, single component bonding agents, and final remarks. For a full archive of UltraDent's podcasts, please visit podcast.ultradent.com. If you have any ideas or suggestions for an upcoming podcast, please send an email to ultradentnews@ultradent.com.